So today I'd like to talk on what the group from Moscow and I are calling the fourth section in Shodoka. And I will read you Eiken Roshi's translation with this, and then also Nelson Foster and Benjamin Broz's translation, just to give you a little bit of a sense of the taste of these different translations. So during this session, I was thinking to give four talks on Shodoka, and then the fifth talk will be on something a little more miscellaneous, and then the sixth talk will be on a piece from the Genjo Koan, which I've started doing with the group over in Moscow. So this section goes like this. Clarify the five eyes and develop the five powers. This is not intellectual work, just realize, just know. It is not difficult to see images in a mirror, but who can take hold of the moon in the water? So cleansing the five eyes, this is another translation, obtaining the five powers. Only with realization can you fathom the inscrutable. Seeing reflections in a mirror isn't difficult, but can you grasp the moon in the water? Always working alone, always walking alone, the enlightened one walks the free way of nirvana, with melody that is old and clear in spirit and naturally elegant in style, but with body that is tough and bony, passing unnoticed in the world. So again, here's the Foster translation. Always practicing alone, always walking alone, masters all tread the same road of nirvana. Their tone is ancient, their spirits pure and barren, lofty, pallid and bony, people scarcely notice. We know that Shakya's sons and daughters are poor in body but not in the Tao. In their poverty, they always wear ragged clothing, but they have the jewel of no price treasured within. And then from Foster, though Buddhist renunciants are spoken of as poor, in fact their poverty is of the body, not of the Tao. Poverty is a body always wrapped in a patched robe. The Tao is the mind containing a priceless jewel. So, as I've said before, if you're interested or find important knowing about the five eyes or the five powers noted here by Yung Chia, please look at Buddhism and Zen by Nyogen Senzaki and Ruth McCandless, or look to Nelson Foster's footnote. I think it is important to know the fives, the sevens, and nines, but this has never been my forte, so please turn to others for help. When you wake up, the number and types of things become rather clear or unimportant, depending on your personality or predilections. However, it is important to live your life fully and not stay lost in associative thinking, feeling, and sensing patterns. Before we start practicing, it is hard to stay present with ourselves or with things. We so easily drift into the past or leap forward into the future. Our habituated patterns of thinking and feeling are deeply and subtly ingrained, and we hardly realize that we aren't present. In fact, for many, this thing called present doesn't exist at all. The present is simply a reformulation of past experiences that we carry with us and put new experiences into. so we can feel safe and comfortable. But as we practice, as we quiet, we begin to create space. We begin to see and hear more accurately, which is to say, with loosened associations. What is right before our eyes doesn't immediately link to the past or leap to a future. We can see things. We can feel things more closely to what they are. Be encouraged by this. But Jung Chia warns us, saying, it is not difficult to see images in a mirror, but who indeed, but who can take hold of the moon and the water? So the author is saying, as you clarify the five eyes, as you begin to see with non-discriminating eyes, with eyes that do not create subject and object, the mirror of wisdom, the ancient mirror that is before beginningless and after endless, begins to reflect truly what passes before it. A little later on in Shodoka, the author again refers to the mirror, saying, the luminous mirror shines brilliantly without obstructions to the depths and in every grain of sand. Multitudinous things of the cosmos are all reflected, and this full clarity is beyond inner and outer. This is a lovely experience, a lovely signpost on the way, but it is not a place to stop and linger. That is the temptation when things reflect simply as they are. We feel clearer and lighter, and the world feels clearer and lighter, and there is a vast spaciousness that arises within us, and we take delight in that quite naturally. But if we stop and make this temporary experience into something, it is like trying to take hold of the moon in water. We grab and grab and grab, trying to hold on. But all we do is cause ourselves frustrations and disappointments. Once a man saw the moon in the lake water down at the bottom of the hill. He was mesmerized by the beauty of the scene and was brought to tears. Of course, he wanted to share this event with his friends, and he too wanted to remember it. So he got a bucket. He dipped the bucket into the moon lake and took bucket by bucket by bucket home with him. Of course, he discovered when he finally stopped at home that he only had water. Don't let anything in your practice be an object. You are not the object of your practice. Mu is not an object. The waves splashing, the gulls squawking, the bush tits skittering are not objects. It is easy to describe and give an outline of our lives and say things that are true about ourselves. We can say what we love or hate. We can say what we are drawn towards or repelled by. We can say what makes our hearts sing or shudder. But this is not the time or place for any of that. This place here in Sesshin, is the time for living your lives fully. And to live fully means to let go of it completely as you join with each thing that you are doing. You live fully by letting go again and again, giving yourself up to whatever is right before your eyes. You live by meeting each circumstance anew, with no links to something called the past. Each breath fresh, each sound just born. Just move like none before and none after. Dogen, in an essay titled The Moon, says it like this. So, although the moon was there last night, tonight's moon is not yesterday's moon. We should thoroughly investigate the idea that the moon tonight, at the beginning, middle, and end, is the moon tonight. The moon succeeds the moon, so it is neither new or old. And then he continues on, saying, never cling to humans' narrow views and considerations. There are no subjects. There are no objects. All reference points are obsolete. There is only the splashing of waves, the roaring of wind, the creaking of a chair, the warmth of the body sitting next to you. This is the why and how of always walking alone, always working alone, fresh, new, included by and including all things. So Jung Jia writes, always working alone, always walking alone, the enlightened one walks the free way of nirvana. With melody that is old and clear in spirit and naturally elegant in style, but with body that is tough and bony, passing unnoticed in the world. We know that Shakya's sons and daughters are poor in body, but not in the Tao. In their poverty, they always wear ragged clothing, but they have the jewel of no price treasured within. So Jung Jia is not espousing the philosophy of rugged individualism, but he is describing the experience of being confirmed by and confirming all things. This is the ancient or timeless way of royal ease that all masters traverse from one step to the next. They are in tune with the deepest rhythms of the universe. They're in tune with the rhythms of low and high tide, with new and full moon. They are in tune with the rhythms of budding branches and falling leaves, of birth, sickness, old age, and death. They walk alone, smiling, even when tears are roiling down their faces, and they pass unnoticed, for who and what are they at bottom? When you walk this way, you are clothed by the moon, stars, and the great northern lights. This is true poverty, for everything has been stripped away. Each thing has fallen away, and all that is left is what is vividly apparent and real. So that being said, I'd like to look more particularly at clarify the five eyes and develop the five powers. Only with realization can you fathom the inscrutable. The way we clarify the five eyes is to see through the mistaken and limiting notion of subject and object. Because of the conditions we were born into, we have a particular way of both seeing and experiencing the world. Maybe when we were young, we were wide open and free, although I think we were still, even at that time, thrown about by our biological drives and necessities. As we develop in age, we narrow and dull our senses and the possibilities of the world. We begin to call our experience reality. However, as we practice, we see through. We begin to notice, see, and experience the links we have created between what we see and hear and what we feel. We begin to see and experience the links we've created between what we feel and our sensations, between our sensations and our thoughts. We begin to see and know ourselves as constructed, and then we begin to see through that, see through the constructions. And we begin to experience the porousness and the spaciousness that we are. Another way to say this may be that in the beginning, we could only see when the sun was out. We could see self and other, tall and short, black and white. We could see sickness, old age, and death. But as we practice over the hours and the hours, over the days and days, maybe even over the years and years, the sun begins to go down and our eyes adjust to the coming dark, black and white. Male and female, old and young, are not so then easily discerned in that nighttime. Finally, the day ends, the sun goes down, and it is night, dark, with no moon yet on the horizon. Initially, we feel blind, but then we begin to see differently. We begin to see the dark, and we begin to know the dark for what it is, the birthplace of all things. All things from the same exact material. We develop our night eyes, and then the moon rises, and we begin to name things and ourselves. We begin to say tree, bush, bare, clouds, stars. But even with that naming, we know that all have the same last name. And finally, still seeing with our night eyes, the dawn comes, followed by the day, and we go to our jobs, pick up the kids at school, and go shopping. All five eyes now clarified, all intact, all operating. The five powers which deepen as we clarify our eyes are faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Each of these could be the subject for an entire talk. So I'd like to look just at the one, faith, in a shorthanded type of way. In our study of Lin Chi last year and of the Lotus Sutra last May, we found faith to be a seminal point. In fact, Zen practice is not possible without faith. Many of us coming to Zen thought we left faith behind in our old religion and in our family's religion. But here it is again, the first of the five powers. So what is faith? Faith is the desire. Faith is the desire to sit under the Bodhi tree on your very own cushion. Faith is the understanding that Shakyamuni was a man made of blood, bone, and guts. It's the understanding that he was a man made of genitals, spine, and heart. He was not a god or a saint, and he wasn't a divine son born to a virgin. He was not an arahat or a bodhisattva. He was someone, a man, who touched and was touched by pain and suffering. He was someone, a man who wanted a deeper meaning in his life. He was a man who wanted to alleviate suffering, his and other beings, and so he dedicated his life to waking up. And with faith and effort and mindfulness and concentration, he woke up into his own inherent wisdom and compassion. Or as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, he woke up into his own inherent love and understanding. Faith is knowing that he was a human and he woke up. Faith is knowing that you, a man or woman, are human, and that you too can wake up to yourself. Okay, thank you.